I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, we're going to talk with Julius Coles, the president of AfriCare, as he prepares to step down as leader of the oldest and largest African-American-led relief and development organization working in Africa. He talks about why he loves Africa so much. That conversation later this hour. But first, two stories of women trying to give a voice to the voiceless. Turn to the op-ed pages of most major newspapers in this country, and you will see that most of the submissions are written by men. We'll hear from someone who's trying to empower more women, from stay-at-home moms to female CEOs to women who are incarcerated, to submit opinion pieces and to influence public discussion and policy. That in just a few minutes. For now, though, we turn to social critic and writer Barbara Ehrenreich. We spotted her op-ed in the New York Times over the weekend that puts a spotlight on people who are most affected by the recession, but whose voices we rarely hear, the working poor. Barbara Ehrenreich joins us now from our D.C. studios. Welcome. Thank you for joining
us. Glad to be with you, Michelle.
Your op-ed is titled Too Poor to Make the News, and you say that the descent from excess has been well documented. You say that the super rich give up their personal jets, the upper middle class cut back on private Pilates classes, the merely middle class forego vacations and evenings at Applebee's. But you're saying that the media's fallen in love with the riches to rags story, but that people who are having trouble making it all the time are almost not present in our conversation.
Well, yes, it began to bother me. I just read one too many stories about a wealthy person having to cut back on the hours of a personal trainer. And I thought, this is the recession? It's not, you know, what I knew was being experienced in my own extended family. And all that, you know, the kind of the wake-up call here was an email telling me that my nephew's mother-in-law, sounds a little distant, but I'm very close to my nephew, was about to be foreclosed upon unless I, well, principally me, send some money right away. And then the backstory, though, was really depressing. I mean, here's a woman, 55, single or divorced, who was single-handedly supporting two grandchildren and a child who was disabled by working three part-time jobs. Three. She had a heart attack from doing that, and fell behind on her mortgage payments, and that's why she was about to be foreclosed on. It wasn't a subprime situation. Actually, it got worse when I learned more that it wasn't even a house. It was a single-wide trailer that she lives in.
Which had implications for the kind of interest rate she was able to get, because she wasn't even able to get one of those, even a sort of a 30-year fixed rate loan that you could get on a house.
No,
she had to pay
12%.
For like a car note. It was essentially a car note.
Yeah, right. Now it's treated as a vehicle, but that's where these four people live, in this tiny trailer. And I thought, oh my God, you know, now partly that's not a new thing to happen, right? You know, people with low wages and multiple jobs are always having health problems and falling behind, and that kind of thing is not news in itself. But there are so few jobs now. You know, now that she's recovered, it's very hard to find any jobs in the area of rural Missouri where she lives. And I began to think, this is the story of the recession. Not, you know, Bernie Madoff's wife having not being able to go to her beauty parlor anymore because nobody will speak to her, but people who were on the edge before who have fallen over the edge.
Is part of it, though, that the media is interested in the unusual as opposed to the usual? That somebody who has never had to worry about money, at least they never really thought that hard about it, now having to think about it is more of a cultural change and therefore more, not disturbing, but just sort of more noticeable, particularly to reporters who are themselves usually middle class.
No, I understand that completely. The nouveau poor, people who've come into poverty or near poverty as a result of recession, that's like a story. Wow. But what you're leaving out, if you just focus on them, is that there's three times more unemployment among blue-collar people than there is among white-collar people. For all the devastation in the white-collar middle class, which I, you know, very much worry about, there is something happening to people who are already having trouble, which I think we really have to pay attention to. They're closing the gap with third world sorts of poverty living conditions.
And you feel that that is really invisible and not as much a part of the larger conversation
not, no,
as. And you
say, no.
Why do you think that is? You think because people just don't believe it, or they just don't see it, or what?
Well, it's partly what you said. It doesn't seem like a story. I've been corresponding with a reporter in, I think it's Alabama, and he was told, no, this isn't interesting. And he was finding some of the same things I was finding. People now beginning to live off, for example, raccoons, squirrels. He was finding that too. Just appalling thing. I think the biggest thing I found that people are doing to adjust is crowding, doubling up. So many people are now living like that.
Before we move on, I want to play a clip from a conversation we had last month where we asked, does it cost more to be poor? So here's our regular contributor, Danette Tucker. She's a regular contributor to our parenting segment, single mom with two kids. And she wasn't in love with the concept of the segment. Here's a little of what she had to say. Here it is.
There are a lot of things made available to us that they don't talk about in the studies when they study the poor, quote unquote, the working poor. They look at their numbers, you know, but nobody comes and knock on the door, sit down, I'll tell you the truth. We're making it. You know, we're used to making it with that. I'd like to have my salary back. And yeah, I'm busting it to get a job, but until then, I still got to make it.
I talked to Danny about this after the program, and here's what the impression I got. She didn't particularly appreciate being described as poor or a low income. And I'm asking you, as a person who's done a lot of reporting in this field, and is also, as you've discussed, you know, people in your own family need a hand, as do many of ours, that people in this country don't like to perceive themselves as needing help, that people like to perceive themselves as middle class.
I just think it's beginning to change because it's just impossible to conceal anymore. And also the luster has gone off of wealth due to the whole economic meltdown. Our heroes are not billionaire CEOs anymore. I think we're getting a little saner values here where we're not valuing people by their assets, you know, but by their character and their personality and everything. But things are changing.
But I asked, we had another program recently where we talked about the degree to which medical bills contribute to personal bankruptcy in this country. And a new report suggests that it is, in fact, a majority of personal bankruptcies in the study period were attributable in some part to medical bills. And when I asked the researcher, why is this not more known? She said, I still think there's a sense of shame. And I wanted to ask you if you think that might be true.
Partly, I think, for people, and it's not just the long-term poor, it's also people who are tumbling down from the white-collar middle class right now. We've got to get to the point where we're saying, yeah, I'm not rich. I'm not middle class. This is what I am now. Now, how do I gather with other people and make change?
And finally, there's been a lot of talk over the last couple of months of the various government plans to stimulate the economy and to save the auto industry in some form or another. Do you see any evidence that the attention of policymakers is engaged by the people that you write about, the lowest wage workers? Do you see any evidence that any of these plans will improve the lives of the lowest
wage
workers?
Well, I think there's some good things about Obama's stimulus plan, that it will increase food stamp allotments and widen eligibility for food stamps. It increases allocations to temporary assistance to needy families and some things like that. But still, that's all rather small compared to the amounts that have been given to the CEOs of banks and automakers. And that appalls me because we have an emergency going on, you know, in America, not enough to eat, not enough dry places to sleep, et cetera. And that, I think, is what we should be facing.
Barbara Ehrenreich is the author of Bait and Switch, The Futile Pursuit of the American Dream, and Nickel and Dimed on Not Getting By in America, among other works. She was kind enough to join us in our Washington, D.C. studios. If you want to read the piece that we are talking about, we will have a link on our website. Barbara Ehrenreich, thank you so much for stopping in.
Oh, my pleasure.